Okay, well, good morning, everyone. For those of you I haven't had a chance to meet before, my name is Pat Cronin, and on behalf of all of my colleagues across BMO Capital Markets, let me just welcome you to our annual Media and Telecom Conference. We've been holding this event for 18 years now, and this is exactly the type of event that we're extremely proud to be hosting, providing you with timely information, access to senior management, and insightful analysis and perspective from our superstar equity research team. Now, since we all got together last year, the Canadian telecom, cable, and media stocks have generally outperformed the overall TSX index. And today, we've assembled senior management from eight companies, representing virtually the entire industry. And there's certainly no shortage of topics to discuss, from the changing competitive landscape in Western Canada to a new CRTC chair who's only been in the job for, I think, exactly 1 week, to the challenges of keeping up with technology and ever-changing consumer behavior. To that end, major U.S. players have announced a number of video streaming initiatives to join an already extremely crowded field, and some observers even worry that with so much content, we may even be approaching bubble territory. As I think myself, how I communicate and interact with the media today compared to maybe five or even 8 years ago, and then try to contemplate how that's going to again change over the next couple of years, it certainly is an exciting and I would say certainly a somewhat overwhelming point in time in the industry. So there is a lot of ground to cover, and we're going to get to it all. I want to thank all of you for joining us this morning and look forward to a fruitful day for all of you. And I want to tell you that we certainly value your business and we value our relationship with all of you. And if there's anything that we or I can do to help make this conference more efficient and more enjoyable for you, please don't hesitate to let us know. Now, just before we get going, I'd like to give a quick plug for an initiative that we do every single year at BMO Capital Markets. It's our annual Equity Through Education Trading Day, and it's taking place tomorrow, September the 13th. And so on Wednesday, we will donate 100% of our institutional equity trading commissions in both North America and Europe to a series of charities that provide scholarships, bursaries, mentoring programs, and development opportunities for deserving students who might not otherwise be able to pursue their studies. We started Equity Through Education in 2005, and so this year marks our 13th trading day. And I'm proud to say that to date, we've raised nearly $18 million and helped over 3,000 students. And so more information is available certainly outside the room today, but let me thank every one of you in advance for your continued support of this important program, and we look forward to handling your trades tomorrow. So now, back to the business at hand. Our conference is set up as a series of fireside chats, and it's my great pleasure to introduce your moderator. I think most of you, I'm sure, know Tim Casey. He covers telecom services, entertainment, and cable for us. And so, Tim, I'll turn it over into your capable hands.
Thanks, Pat, and good morning, everyone. Before we get underway, I just got a couple of housekeeping items. The majority of today's conference is webcast, so there is going to be safe harbor slides on the screen. I'm not going to go through them, but I'd encourage you to look them over. And BMO Capital Markets will also display a slide for each company with respect to our company-specific disclosures. We are going to try and do one-on-one fireside chats here today, but we'd encourage everyone to ask questions. There will be mics in the room, and alternatively, you can submit a question via the conference app. If you want to download, it's available at bmoapps.com/MTC. And you should have been given a card when you checked in today for the Wi-Fi network, and it is BMO guest, and the password is wish fulfilled. And if there's anything else we can do for you, please, we've got a number of people around the room. Just don't hesitate to ask if you need any help. And with that, I think we'll get started with George.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well.
Great. Nice to see you. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming back, George.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
I thought we'd start right away into wireless, where obviously a lot of the action is. The market growth in Canada has been quite robust for a while now. Do you want to weigh in on what you think is driving it across the market?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very strong, you know, first half of the year for wireless, for sure, in Canada. Not just us, but obviously our competitors. I've talked about it a few times on calls, but I think it really is, you know, the drivers that I've talked about that are moving it forward. You know, net immigration this year, I think it's around 350,000 new Canadians. That's clearly pretty important, particularly if you look at our immigration policy and how we bring in people to the country. And so that obviously drives adoption, and you take that by our competitive marketplace, and you can run the math pretty quickly on why that does for growth. The second line phenomenon continues to grow. Most folks starting in a new career move to a second phone. There's a personal one and a business one. That may be a more unique Canadian than what we're seeing sometimes in the United States, but certainly we think that's driving some significant strength in the marketplace. Overall, stronger economy. Clearly, the numbers that are coming out are looking more positive than I think most had expected. And then I think the adoption of this technology from a video perspective being so powerful now is probably bringing people into the space. Well, that's a harder one to imagine everybody isn't in the space, but there's still growth there. So I think those are the pieces of the puzzle that are driving it. And then for us specifically, you know, we continue, because of the network investment we make, continue to differentiate ourselves, certainly against our largest competitor from a speed perspective. And we think that's going to continue to not just help us in the consumer side, but on the corporate side. And we're seeing some strong results there as well within the business B2B side of wireless, you know, which is different than some of the challenges on the wireline side.
Specifically within your mix, how are you approaching it between your main brand, the Bell brand, and your flanker brands? What sort of dynamics are you seeing? Because obviously with a mature market like Canada, it's segmented fairly well.
Yeah, I mean, it is segmented. We've for a long time had a fairly disciplined execution on the markets that each of the brands focus on and the product portfolio. You know, by way of example, we don't carry the Virgin brand in the Bell stores. We have different distribution channels, some overlap, but not within Bell stores. Products, when they're released, would roll out to our Bell brand first and then roll into our value brand secondly. We would do some unique products for that positioning. Compensation for channels would reflect the various revenue that you generate off of the different portfolios. And I think it would be fair to say Virgin's particularly focused in the youth segment and probably more in the value segment. And yet, frankly, obviously both get the benefit of the network position that we have. And so that hasn't really changed, I would say, much in terms of our focus. But it does take a significant amount of discipline from an execution perspective. Because you overlap the channels, you can end up, quite frankly, you know, doing some damage from a reprice perspective if you're not careful how you're managing the two brands and making sure they stay focused on the markets you're targeting on.
Right. And the second quarter call, you mentioned there was you thought you'd have to do a little bit more work on prepaid. It's a segment that I don't think you said ignored, but that there might be more opportunity there. Is there anything more to say on that?
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk a little more about that space. I mean, it's not been, you know, financially that attractive a space for us. We focused, you know, when we started this re-journey at Bell a number of years ago, we were so focused on prepaid, we just weren't creating value. And so we course-corrected the Virgin brand and the Bell brand to be focused strictly on, not strictly, but primarily on the postpaid side. And the only thing we've just got to watch is there is a embedded migration from prepaid to postpaid. Sometimes you get off of the base. We have to make sure that we're paying attention to that. And we are watching that and trying to determine, okay, is there an opportunity there or not, without cannibalizing what we're doing. So we'll see how that evolves in the market over time.
And Virgin was just awarded the J.D. Power Award for number one for customer service. Is there anything to take away from that?
Yeah, well, first of all, obviously we're really proud of it, you know, because clearly some of our, one of our competitor talks about their service level being superior. So for us to see our brand win that award, and it is all about customer expectation. Ironically, it is actually behind the wall, the identical service, exactly the same service give Bell customers. So it is interesting about perception of value. So part of J.D. Power, of course, includes value. what the price is of the product. So you're going to actually, interestingly enough, your score can change just based on value versus, if you're focused on a value sector, but it's getting the similar service, then you're going to see those. So great for us from a positioning perspective, certainly with the market we focus on from a version perspective.
Right.
And helps churn, and we've seen that in some of our numbers. Yeah.
And any interesting dynamics or change in dynamics coming out of the enterprise segment?
I mentioned on the wireless side, very positive. We think we're seeing that in our results. I mentioned on the last call on the wireline side, little bit of strength in the small business side that we're seeing. And then you get these numbers from the economy that are announced, and you go, okay, now I see it. There's a little bit of starting of businesses, and of course we'd be one of the organizations you'd go to do that. In that space too, we've been positioning our video product with our internet product as a bundle, because a lot of small businesses, if you look, almost every business you visit actually has video one way or another. So that's been part of the focus. At the top end of the enterprise space, that interesting with the growth, we'll see how that unfolds. But one of the challenges there with technology productivity, we are so driven by employment growth at the top end of corporate Canada. And, I think that's been not a lot of our large customers are adding a lot of employees to the base. So that and repricing technology continues to be clearly one of our challenged portfolios. Great cash flow, great market position, but not where we're seeing the growth like we are in internet and we are in wireless and we are in enterprise wireless.
Just, be remiss if we didn't touch a bit on MTS and the migration from that transaction. Can you give us an update there?
Yeah, it's going extremely well. We're really pleased. The brand in the marketplace is so strong, and so that's one of the great benefits. And I think it's one of the takeaways we picked up in the Bell Alliant transaction. Now we have Bell MTS. In those communities, those organizations are so much a part of the community, and trying to get the balance, bringing the benefits of Bell to the community and not losing the benefits of the local brand is what we're trying to do. But, we'll see a margin improvement of almost 10% on that business in the first 12 months of owning it from an EBITDA perspective, because of the synergies that we're seeing on that. From a wireless perspective, probably happier than we would have expected. I mean, we're seeing churn levels that are generally on a monthly basis under 1%. And combining, now that we've expanded the footprint, the Bell customers that we had there, so the Bell wireless customers in Manitoba didn't have access beyond Winnipeg, and now they have access to the entire province. So we're seeing that, and as I mentioned, I think on a few calls, moving roaming traffic from one of our competitors to us or some of the synergies. So off to a reasonably good start. On the wireline side, there's investments required there. It's not the asset that we would have purchased at Bell Alliant, where if you look at what it done there, there's a lot of fiber. So we'll have to work our way through that. It has a strong market position, but we've got to get some of our IPTV products in that market to compete with what Shaw is doing, and we'll do that that's part of our integration plan, and that'll happen over the next year.
Right. So
off to a good start.
Off to a good start.
Yeah.
Okay, great. There's going to be a big announcement from Apple later today. Sounds like it's going to be a pretty expensive device, but investors are always curious as whether you think there'll be some vibrations in the marketplace as the market is seeded with the new phones.
Right.
Any commentary there that's worth
discussing? Well, I think we have to see the announcement, right? So I've got to be obviously respectful of Apple, new products. That creates excitement in the market, and obviously investors know that. I think the challenge obviously will just be based on the product price we're all hearing, and you put that in Canadian dollars, you get into a $1,200 plus price point for a phone, and then even with some subsidies that we do that are fairly significant, that will be the test to what the upgrade pace is. I think it's going to be great technology. Every time we launch these new products, of course, we see an improvement in the video use of the product, and of course, that drives for investors the revenue that we're seeing and the growth we're seeing in the industry. But in terms of how dramatic, that'll be a function of supply and a function of price point and a function, obviously, the consumer preference for the product. But, it's obviously an exciting day, and we'll see what unfolds. It makes the industry exciting and creates the growth that we see.
Have you seen anything from the Samsung release, the recent 8, which, got fairly good technical reviews in the trade?
Excellent. I mean, the reality is we have, tremendous technology that we're bringing to the marketplace from the suppliers, and Now it's all about what other suppliers will ultimately compete with those significant suppliers from the carrier perspective. For us, more choice is better for the consumer, so that's where we want to see, and for the business market as well.
Maybe just a comment on your perspective on the proposals from the government with respect to the 600 spectrum auction. Looks like they're putting some set aside, or they're proposing set asides. How are you approaching that file?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say spectrum is always important to us from a strategic perspective. It's, low band spectrum, 600 meg. So that, that's interesting spectrum. Maybe a little different in the U.S. We'll have to see, because Canada, with our propagation spectrum that goes far, has had some value that might be a little different. We'll see how that unfolds. Obviously, we'll take a position that Canadian taxpayers shouldn't subsidize two of the largest telecom companies or cable companies. Two of the largest cable companies in Canada shouldn't be subsidized by taxpayers. And that'll be a position we'll take, and we'll make sure that the finance minister is aware of that, and that ISED is aware of that, and that they make sure this isn't what we did a few years ago. We had some startups, and so it was a proposal as to what will happen, and we'll take a position to make sure there's a balanced discussion on that, and make sure people are aware that maybe companies with market caps close to TELUS's market cap really don't need Canadian taxpayers to subsidize spectrum.
Okay. Switching over to wireline, obviously the cable operators most of them have selected the Comcast platform.
Right.
I think investors would want to hear how you're approaching that, and maybe if you can frame the discussion, just give us a quick update on your fiber build and footprint.
Yeah, I think first of all, it'll be a competitive product. There's no doubt that it's been successful in the United States. There are obviously some distinct differences. In the United States, I think Comcast is adding about 130% net market share on a quarterly basis from an internet perspective. And so clearly that helps pull through TV. That's not the internet market that we have in Canada. So I think that's going to be an important component. Secondly, there are some differentiations in our product that are in, people can see it in the market now versus what Comcast offers, so it'll be a competitive approach. But I think the thing for investors from our perspective, the most strategic thing we've done in the last two quarters is the launch of Alt TV. And I don't really think people have seen what we're doing there, which is really a TV service within our TV footprint that's a streamed service in our BDU license service, and it's two streams. It's a non-set-top box TV service with all content available. So no truck roll from us, no set-top box, targeting completely the cord-cut market. And you take an internet subscription with Bell, and you get this product, and it's every piece of content that's available out there from a linear TV perspective. And we think that's a great differentiation. We'll be interested to see if our competitors have that technology capability. I invite people to use the app. If you haven't used the Fibe TV app as investors in Toronto, I don't think you really actually therefore would understand what the power of the product is. And if we're fortunate, that would hopefully create some acceleration back in the video business, because then we're targeting both the cord cut market and the linear TV market with really a product that's priced lower, and we're going to pass that entire price on to the consumer because we're not doing the truck roll and we don't need the set-top box. And then the way we're obviously trying to manage the base is it's only two streams within a household, so no more than two streams. And if you look across our linear TV portfolio, that's generally more than two set-top boxes. And so it really is targeting the incredible growth in the condominium market that we're seeing. And combining that with our fiber launch, which will be much more significant in Toronto early in the new year, I'm really quite pleased with where we sit strategically right now. Now it's about executing. But I do think the whole thing we're doing on the Alt TV is really that combined with IPTV gives us a video platform. And the other piece for that is for Bell Media. Because once, and by the way, for the other media companies in Canada, for Corus as well, if we are pursuing through Alt TV a product that has all the TV content without a set-top box and without the truck roll, they can monetize the advertising dollars. Because everyone who's watching Alt TV is basically counted and used for driving eyeballs for ad spend. So it puts all of the content that Canadian, Corus as well, they would be through that product. So would our competitor on Sportsnet from Rogers, all in that product. And then the other piece of that, of course, it means that you actually have access to all sports in Canada now, well, in our footprint anyway, through this product. And it's very similar to something that one of our competitors in wireless, but not a competitor in wireline, TELUS has done in Western Canada, which we think is encouraging also for the entire ecosystem in Canada.
Well, that's a good segue into the topic of streaming. Obviously, a number of the big U.S. players appear to be pursuing direct-to-consumer models. I mean, that would appear to be good news for your big businesses, your distribution businesses, but it might create some headaches in your smaller businesses, specifically in media, in terms of access to rights or the price of rights. How are you approaching, or how are you thinking about the streaming environment as it evolves?
Well, really, it comes back to the conversation on the all-TV strategy. I mean, if you look at our relationship with HBO, with Showtime, you know, this product means if you had alt-TV, you had the ability to watch Game of Thrones without a traditional TV subscription, but through this type of subscription, and that drives volume for the distributors. The thing that's unique in Canada, you know, the average TV bill in Canada is around $60 to $65 Canadian. The average pay TV bill in the U.S. is around $90. The average OTT service in the U.S. now, you talk about, people are talking about $40, $45 U.S. Put that in Canadian dollars, financial arbitrage doesn't quite look quite the same in our country, because we've had such a competitively intense TV business for over the last decade. The pricing isn't at the price point. We have a very, you know, healthy internet marketplace and TV, but it's been a combined business here. So, you know, I think when you come up here, and people talk about, I'm going to have a $45 service in the U.S., you put that in Canadian, that lays right on top of, and frankly, is not even price competitive with what we're doing with alt TV. So I think, and I would expect some of our cable competitors over time to enter the space that way as well, and I think that'd be good for media companies. We'll see how it unfolds.
Is there any questions from the audience before we get to some more here? Okay, just going to sort of go into some other areas, just trying to hit them quickly in the time we have left. In an odd bit of timing, the CRTC released an interim decision on reseller rates right before the new chair came in.
Yes.
But the rates seemed to be in line with what you had proposed. There were some differences there. It's a complex file, but by and large, that was our read of it.
Yeah.
How should people think about the reseller market, and which is, what, about 12% of the market now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, on the fiber file specifically, it's still quite early days, and even the CRTC has said that. There's a process unfolding as to how that's going to be priced in the marketplace. Obviously, Bell's been very, very clear on our position. We're spending our shareholders' capital for fiber. Someone else wants to build out their own internet, go right ahead, but we're not in the business of putting other people in business. The regulator will decide on what that price is, and we'll obviously make sure we try to get the cost recovery, and we'll see how that plays out. In terms of that space, the other thing strategically we have done is the launch of Virgin Internet on the wireline side, and really that's really an economic and financial model decision that says, if there's going to be a discount segment on the internet, we might as well use one of our brands to pursue that segment and compete with the wholesalers. So then we get full retail price at the Virgin price versus the wholesale price we would have got for that subscriber. Of course, the trick always there is to watch the re-rate of your own base, all those type of things. But we've had experience in Canada and how to do that in the wireless business. See the consumer get the benefit of a lower priced product, and see us get the competitive benefit of, if someone is choosing those services, Bell's getting that customer through one of our brands or one of our channels. I think that's maybe the most strategic development in that space in the last 12 to 15 months. You know, we're doing it obviously really where we have internet footprint only. It's not something we would have in outside our footprint, because that's not what Virgin Internet is. It's a product that we sell on the Bell internet services, not something that we'd, for instance, be in Western Canada with or another footprint. That's not the purpose of that product.
Can we dig a little deeper again on the enterprise and SME, sort of the non-consumer businesses? You mentioned the strong economic numbers. For years at this forum, you've said you need 3% GDP growth to grow the business.
Yeah.
Q2 numbers come in 4.5. I know where you're going to go with this, but sounds like a big...
Top line revenue's tripled because we're at 4.5 and just doing fantastic. Yeah. And it was in the rearview mirror. I mean, I think that the comment, I want to repeat myself in the room, but I mean, we clearly, I mentioned on the call, didn't know about GDP, But clearly, there's a correlation because small business, we saw it pick up, right? On the enterprise side, it's a better year-over-year for our enterprise group, but it's not on the plus side of the ledger. And if we do have sustained growth of those type of GDP numbers, we'll both know whether what I've been saying for the last few years plays out or not. Fundamentally, you know, if you just kind of look at the technology in that particular group, challenges of growth, I mean, the productivity growth, right? We have, you know, our 6-7 largest customers would be the great financial institutions in the country, but probably not a lot of branch expansion going on within those key customers of ours. If anything, you know, less branches, that means less employees, so not as much. The alternative to that, of course, is a great upgrade in the technology towards fiber by a lot of the institutions for the customers in those locations, and that is actually, over time for us, a great place for us where we'll play, we'll have those relationships, and keeps that stickiness with those customers going. So I always say for us it hasn't as much been a market share issue as it has simply been a technology evolution issue there. And obviously because it amortizes off our entire wireline fiber network, it's part of the key contributor to the growth of the fiber that we can do.
It's also a lever, technology and the pace of the developments there is also a lever you use for margins. Because when we look at Bell, one of the things that always stands out is your wireline margins are, you rate very well against your peer group. And, you know, you've always talked about how you're using that to continue to manage your cost base. Do you still see runway on that side?
Yeah, we do. And it's really about this technology of change of consumer business behavior and fiber investments. You know, if you think about, and every one of these organizations would be seeing as well, but the behavior of the consumer to not call a call center and instead make the changes on their handset, right, and make a change of your TV package on screen. You know, again, call volumes, call centers are one of our most expensive area, and it's the area that as we've grown the business and what's been somewhat more comfortable through a lot of natural attrition, because some of those organizations can have higher turnover than some other areas, just historically always have, we see a constant decline there. The other area we clearly know we're going to see cost reductions is as we roll out fiber, because we've seen it where we did it in the, you know, the 3.0 over a million places that we've done. Truck rolls get reduced because fiber doesn't need the repair level that copper does. And then if you overlay that with something like Alt TV and no set-top box, then we're not rolling a truck for a set-top box, right? So it's all about the two most expensive parts for a wireline organization are those two areas I've just talked about, and then, of course, there's the big capital dollars. That's not reducing because we're taking that margin. I think it's given us a unique position almost globally to invest in fiber in a very aggressive way and without generating a negative cash flow wireline position. And then the only thing I would say about fiber that it's hard to know how it'll sort out, but there's no doubt the fiber we're building will ultimately position us from a 5G perspective in a very unique position. Because every single street and every single home will be done within certainly the urban markets that we have a wireless network, so we won't have to rebuild fiber for 5G. We'll actually have it in place. So how much of that, you know, wireline investment do you amortize towards wireless? We frankly don't care because we happen to own both assets. And I think if you look now at our footprint with MTS and Bell Alliant, where we now have 70% of the Canadian households and businesses covered, that's a pretty unique position for us from the coming together of wireless and wireline broadband technology, which is, it's clear now investors are seeing that the value of fiber goes beyond the value of just the wireline business. If you look what's happening with the talk of where 5G will take us.
Last question, I thought we'd just wrap up with a really big picture topic, and that's NAFTA. It's in the news. President Trump has made some comments, or his staff has made some comments about telecom. And obviously, he has some interesting negotiating positions on files like this. But you're not in the room, but can you envision a scenario where telecom becomes a regulation gets changed in the context of NAFTA?
Well, first of all, your comment, I'm not in the room, is maybe the most relevant thing. What would we want to see happen is that the FCC and the CRTC continue to be the regulatory bodies that make the decisions for both industries. That's been the tradition. That's really what came out of the last NAFTA. I mean, not that it came out of it. It wasn't actually changed. That's what we would hope would come out of that. But, you know, I don't want to get into Sure. You know, we don't even know what's on the table in terms of what people are talking about. It certainly gets a bit of profile that our industry. But if you look, and then sometimes the FCC has exactly the same strategies as the CRTC. Other times it doesn't, depending on time, cycle, parties, et cetera. So that's where I would think it will end up. But honestly, you know, I'm not in the room, and so we'll just have to see and watch this unfold.
Fair enough. I think we'll have to leave it there. Please thank George for coming today.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it.
Thank you.